Hey friends, welcome back to the Meditative Aiden podcast, where we talk about mindfulness and how it can help you work through the challenges and experiences of everyday life. My name is Aiden, and this is episode number 13, titled, How Mindfulness Can Help Changing Perspectives. In today's episode, we're going to talk a lot about perspective, and particularly where perspectives come from and how they develop, but more importantly, how mindfulness can help us change our perspectives to help us lead more fulfilling and peaceful lives. Now, before we get started with today's episode, I just want to remind you guys that you can check out Meditative Aiden on Instagram and Facebook if you like what you hear here. And you can also check out the full blog article on this at meditativeaiden.com/blog. And you can also find a lot of resources on our YouTube channel, the Meditative Aiden YouTube channel. And don't forget that if you like today's episode, to share it and comment on it, whatever it is you do, to help us spread the word about mindfulness and how we can help people change their lives. But enough of that talk, let's get to the episode. So right off the bat, I want to talk about perspective. So we're all pretty familiar with, you know, the idea that different people have different perspectives. But what perspective really means is your personal take on a situation and how you view that situation, really how you perceive it differently than someone else. So for example, you might go to an art gallery and see a painting that's super beautiful. And I mean, you prescribe it as such, you perceive it as such and develop that perspective on it. But someone else who maybe is an art history major finally uses their degree and recognizes that this painting was actually produced by an artist that was like a homicidal schizophrenic or something like that. And so to them, their perspective of it is that, you know, it's kind of a terrifying piece of art, where yours is that it's beautiful. You know, a little less dramatically, you might go to a party and see some cake and you immediately look at it and judge that, you know, it looks good, it looks tasty. Your perspective is that it tastes good. And when you actually bite into it and realize that it's like a fruit cake had a baby with a piece of dirt, your perspective immediately changes. You think that that cake's a sham. And when people ask me how mindfulness can really help them, you know, there are a lot of different answers to that. There are a lot of different solutions and a lot of different ways that mindfulness can help you. But the very first one that comes to mind is this ability to change your perspective. And the reason that I say this is because our perspective, our take on a situation, is usually what determines how that situation affects us. So when mindfulness has the ability to help us change and influence the way that our perspectives interact with our behaviors, we have the ability to influence how we react and respond to situations. But let's look at this a little more closely. And to do so, I want to give you a story. So this story originated somewhere in India a couple hundred years ago, and I took some liberty to make it a little easier to understand, you know, just kind of substituted some parts for others, but the concepts remain the same. So in this story, there are six blind monks, and these monks were born blind, so they don't really know anything else other than relying on the other senses such as touch, taste, sound, and smell to guide their way through reality. Now, one day, the monks are all sitting around the monastery meditating, you know, whatever it is the monks do, and they hear a rumor about a mystical, strange new creature that nobody's ever heard of before. And none of the rumors seem to be able to really nail down what this creature really is. So the monks hire a guide to help them find their way to this mysterious creature. So they pack up their bags and they get ready to go and they make the journey. And when they arrive where the creature is rumored to be, they're greeted briefly by the man who actually owns the beast. And he seems pretty excited for them to meet his new creature and all these things. So he takes them towards where he's been keeping the creature. And the monks surround it and they start walking towards it to try to figure out what it is with, you know, what senses they do have since they can't see it. And as they approach, the first monk feels a long, thick, pole-like structure and decides that it's a giant snake. The second monk, as he approaches, feels a large, thin object that feels like a fan, which he exclaims, although he's a little weirded out, because you know what creature has a fan on it? The third monk feels a large, round, coarse section that resembles the trunk of a tree, and he exclaims that, you know, it must be a tree. But again, he's kind of weirded out because, you know, trees aren't animals. The fourth monk feels a long, rough, vertical surface that resembles the strength of a wall. And he says just as much, and all of them are starting to get perplexed by this beast at this point. The fifth monk felt a thin object, somewhat like a rope, which, you know, he determined must be a rope. And the sixth monk places his hand upon a large, smooth, and yet tough surface with a pointed end, and determines that it must be a spear. And at this point, all of the monks are like, what the heck is this thing? Because all of their different descriptions are conflicting with each other. The man who owns the beast excitedly announces that they're all wrong, and that the beast is actually an elephant. Come to find out that the first monk had felt the elephant's trunk, the second had felt its ear, the third one had felt its legs, the fourth its hide, the fifth its tail, and the sixth its tusk. And the point of this story is to illustrate that no matter who you are, you can only grasp so much of a situation or something that occurs with the limited perspective that you actually have. And the reason that this happens is because, you know, we can only see so much of the big picture. You know, all of us are living inside of a metaphorical forest, and all we can see are the trees. I mean, we're not able to see the entire forest from the trees, as the saying goes. And Stephen Covey actually has a story that he tells in The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People that also illustrates this pretty well. And in this story, he explains that he was riding the subway in New York one day, and the subway train was pretty quiet. You know, there wasn't a lot going on. People were just reading or listening to music or on their phones. And initially, it was a pretty peaceful trip. But they came to a stop at one point where this man got on with a few of his kids. And immediately the train ride became a lot noisier. You know, the kids were running around, they were causing commotion, they were apparently like taking people's newspapers, and you know, they weren't respecting people's personal privacy. And on top of that, they were all yelling at each other at the top of their lungs across the subway. And as you can imagine, you know, this is pretty unordinary. This is something that was causing a lot of distress, and everyone was showing visible signs of discomfort and frustration. And the dad of these children didn't really seem like he was paying attention. You know, it didn't seem like he even cared what it was that they were doing. And at one point, Covey's frustration got to a point where he leaned over to the dad and said, "Hey, I noticed that your kids are being a little rowdy. I'm wondering if you could control them a little better." And the dad, you know, he was leaning his head on, you know, the back of the subway car, and he, you know, pulls up his head and takes a look at Covey and blinks kind of drearily, like he's tired. And he says, "Oh, I'm sorry. They must not know how to act right now. I mean, we just got back from the hospital where their mother died an hour ago. I don't know what to think, and I guess that they just don't know how to handle it either." And as you can imagine, the mood on the train changed substantially, almost instantaneously did a 180, and everyone went from this place of frustration and anger to a place of compassion and asking, you know, how can we help? Do you want to talk about it? You know, what can we do for you? And what happened here was a 180 degree change in their perspective of the situation. You know, they went from that place of anger and that place of judgment of the father and the kids without understanding the whole picture of everything that was going on. And as tragic as this story is, I really love what it tells us about how our perspectives can change in an instant of realization. I mean, the people on the train were most likely adopting the perspective that the man was a poor father and that his kids were absolutely out of control because of him and because he was obviously a bad parent. Like the monks, however, they were only able to perceive one part of the experience that was going on. And with one sentence from the father, everybody's perspectives changed. And the point of these two stories, you know, about the monks and then about Covey's experience on the train, is to express that we can only interpret so much of the world at any given time. Each of us interprets the world through a single lens, so to speak. And each of our lenses has different things that it focuses on and different things that it places emphasis upon. And this is because every single person on this planet has a different set of values and beliefs that guide their actions and how they interpret the world. I mean, as we talked about before, where one person might find a painting beautiful through their metaphorical lens, another might find the same painting frightening through their own lens. You know, in another example, you know, you could have one person looking at the Old Faithful geyser in Yellowstone National Park, and they might see that as a beautiful thing, as a magnificent and beautiful part of this world. On the other hand, though, if someone goes to that geyser who is covered in burns from, you know, boiling hot water that exploded on their stove one day that just, you know, completely covered their body in burn marks, that person's perspective on that same geyser might be more fearful and triggering for, you know, some kind of traumatic sensation. And this is where mindfulness comes in, to help us understand how our perspectives are different, to help us step back and look at the situation a little more neutrally, with a little less judgment and bias towards it. And I don't think it's reasonable for us to assume that, you know, we can come to a complete level of understanding of the big picture of every single situation. I mean, that's just not realistic. But we can, however, recognize that we don't know everything and that we only see the world from a single perspective. For example, when the sensation of anxiety starts to rise in me, I start to get uncomfortable and I appraise it as a bad thing. You know, I don't like feeling anxious, and I'm sure you don't either. And when that experience arises, I often feel the need to escape from it. But just like the monks, I'm blinded by my single perception of anxiety. So when the sensation of anxiety begins to arise, I can only evaluate it against what I already know. I mean, I know that in the past it's caused crippling panic attacks in social situations, and the subsequent humiliation and embarrassment that I feel only reinforces that perspective that, you know, anxiety is a bad thing. But one day I was talking to my mom about the anxiety that I was feeling during high school. And my mom, you know, being no stranger to anxiety herself, very wisely offered me this advice. And she said something along the lines of, "Aiden, have you ever noticed how alike anxiety and excitement are? I mean, they feel almost totally alike. If you try to take a look at the experience of anxiety as excitement instead, you might have a totally different experience with it." And for me in high school, this was like a game changer. This was a big deal because it totally revolutionized the way that I experienced anxiety. Because during my time in high school, you know, I gave a lot of public presentations and I did a lot of public speaking with the volunteer organization that I was a part of. And there was a significant amount of fear and anxiety that was associated with that. But instead of approaching those situations from a place of anxiety, I started telling myself that I must be pretty excited about this if I'm feeling this way. And this change in perspective totally changed the way that I experienced that situation. So the big thing to realize here is that mindfulness can help us develop a greater ability to modify the way that we experience things and the perspectives that we take on situations. You know, as we've talked about before, when experiences arise, like the experience of anxiety that I just mentioned, we tend to take those experiences and judge them immediately. And what happens is we take that judgment, put it on that experience, and then our perspective develops. And that perspective confines us to a certain course of action, to a certain way of acting when an experience occurs. And through the cultivation of mindfulness, we can learn how to separate those judgments first, to develop the ability to adopt healthier perspectives on situations that are more neutral. What this does is it allows us to approach situations with a greater sense of neutrality first, and also a greater sense of compassion. And I'll give you a personal example here of how mindfulness could have helped with an experience that I was going through. Now, this isn't in relation to me specifically having developed a greater sense of mindfulness, but actually someone else. So during my sophomore year of college, I was taking a weekend off to just go hang out with Brock, who's the co-founder of Meditative Aiden. And we were just spending the weekend together, enjoying some time. And I remember that we were just sitting in the backyard having a good time, and my phone started ringing. And I looked down and I saw it was my mom. And I just have this general policy that, you know, when my mom calls, you know, there's no reason not to pick it up. So I picked up the phone and we exchanged some little hellos. And I immediately noticed that, you know, her tone was a little stressed. And she said, "Aiden, I've got to tell you something important. Your dad has had a stroke and we're on our way to the hospital." And for a moment there, I didn't really know what to say. I was, caught so off guard by that statement that, you know, I didn't know how to respond to it. And so I told her that I would be there as soon as I could. And we hung up and I remember sitting in that chair in the backyard with Brock and just overwhelmed with all of these feelings. And, you know, Brock could tell that something was wrong. And he asked me, you know, "Is everything okay?" And in that moment, just this flood of emotion rushed out of me, and I leaned over in the chair and started sobbing. And you can imagine, like, I all these thoughts were going through my head, like, is my dad alive? Is my dad going to be okay? Is he ever going to be the same again? Because I had seen people who had had strokes before, and, you know, the outcomes are okay sometimes, but generally it's a scary situation. And the scary part was that my dad was 40 at the time, and to consider the fact that he was having a stroke that early, to me, said that something was really wrong. So, you know, I quickly said goodbye to Brock. I told him I had to go. I packed up all my things and began, you know, like, I think it was a 5-hour drive down to the hospital. And during this super long drive, there were points where the feelings of, you know, uncertainty and anxiety would become super overwhelming. And so I'd speed up, you know, without knowing it, to dangerously high speeds on the freeway. And there were also times where, you know, I was trying to wipe tears out of my eyes as grief and a different kind of fear started to bubble up inside of me, and I would drive super slow. And while I was in one of these episodes where I was driving slow, a big black pickup with this huge lift kit started tailgating me. And they were tailgating me pretty relentlessly for a couple of miles until a gap opened up in another lane and they were able to, you know, jerk over and pass me. And the driver of this truck offered me a very fine one-finger salute as they roared past me. And as you can imagine, you know, I was feeling so many scary emotions at the time that, you know, when this driver did that, it only added insult to injury from what I was already feeling. I mean, it just made a difficult experience that much more tragic in its own way. It was almost like, you know, I was already hurting and they just decided to rub some salt in this grief wound that was developing. So this was, you know, first and foremost, a really scary experience for our family. But my dad was able to actually make a really miraculous recovery from the stroke. Apparently, he had 8 strokes in total, but he was lucky to survive and develop without any significant impairments. Nonetheless, the point is that this driver that was tailgating me for that time, I assume, had adopted the perspective that I was an obnoxiously slow driver that was out to ruin their day or something. And, you know, I can't blame him for behaving the way that he did, but that also doesn't justify what he did. And this isn't, you know, me just trying to rant about it. The point is that you never know what someone is going through, and you never know what experiences they're facing. So when we adopt these perspectives and we take them out on other people, the behaviors that come out of us can negatively influence the people around us and ourselves. And I know that I'm not guilt-free from having my own episodes of road rage while people are driving slow or things like that. But the purpose of this example is really to illustrate how our perspectives confine us to a course of action that doesn't really serve for the betterment of ourselves or other people. So we've talked about how perspectives can influence our personal lives, you know, with the example that I gave with anxiety, and also how it can influence other people's lives in the example that I just gave. And the point is that when we adopt perspectives, we confine ourselves to very few courses of action. And by stepping back through mindfulness, we can allow ourselves to see situations with greater clarity. And this is how mindfulness can help, by helping us develop the ability to step back from our perspectives to act with greater clarity and compassion towards ourselves and with other people. And mindfulness can also help by preventing us from getting caught up in the trance of our perspectives. You know, when we are so bound to our perspectives, we fall in this rhythmic cycle of constantly behaving as that perspective demands, such as when, you know, anxiety starts to control you. Nonetheless, as humans, you know, we aren't perfect by any means. It's not reasonable to assume that we can be totally neutral all the time. The point is that as we develop mindfulness, we have a greater capability to step back from that perspective and understand how to behave with a greater sense of awareness towards all of the things and all of the experiences that are happening to us, whether that's, you know, anxiety, depression, or road rage, even. And the reason that this is so important, the reason that I call changing perspectives a virtue of mindfulness, is because changing our perspectives allows us to interact with our different experiences and the different things that happen with a greater sense of clarity and purpose. Well, that wraps up today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you did, please make sure to give the Meditative Aiden podcast a thumbs up, like, review, whatever it is you do. And don't forget that you can follow Meditative Aiden on Instagram and Facebook. And you can find the full blog article on changing perspective at meditativeaiden.com/blog. We also have a ton of resources on YouTube for you at the Meditative Aiden YouTube channel. Thanks, guys, so much for listening. Appreciate your support. I hope that you have a great day. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.